Hello and welcome to the next episode of our podcast on negotiation today with a very special guest with Mike Phillips. Mike, who has lots of experience, about 3 decades of experience in negotiating and advising negotiators across the world, in UK, Europe, USA, Asia, across different practices, industries, someone who knows a lot about what it means to negotiate well. And Mike, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Remy. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Yes, and so are we. And there are many viewers and listeners out there who are probably very much looking forward to hearing and listening to your advice on the salary negotiations, because that's also the topic of your most recent book, isn't it?
Correct. Yes, absolutely. And it's a subject close to a lot of people's hearts, I imagine.
Yes. So the title of your book is starts with a very provocative and imagination activating title. It's called The Naked Negotiator. Mike, could you maybe explain who the naked negotiator is and how you came up with this idea?
Sure. So, the idea behind the book, Remy, is that it's a book that is based on, rigorous negotiation theory, but is a book that's readable for, the non-expert negotiator. And so I've written it in a short story format. So the lead character is a young lady called Ellen, and she needs a bigger salary in order for the sake of her family. She's got a great boss, but she just doesn't know how to go about asking for a higher salary. And she stumbles across a rather eccentric, aged negotiator who offers to train her, to coach her, to ask her boss for a negotiation. And in one of the early sessions, she asks the question you just asked: why do you call yourself the naked negotiator? And he explains that, basically all negotiations are similar, because at the end of the day, we're all human. So we're once you whatever you're negotiating, once you take out the specifics of your particular negotiation, you may be negotiating a salary or a price for a new car or whatever, but there are specific things that are relevant to that negotiation. But once you strip all that away, you're left with, if you like, the negotiation theory, the negotiation structure, the nego and hence the naked negotiation. You've stripped away all the specifics, you're left with the naked negotiation, and hence the name.
Naked negotiator. Yes, exactly. So the first thought when I was reading your book, Mike, which I strongly recommend to any and everyone who is thinking about a promotion or getting a higher salary or starting off on the, with the one that reflects his or her value, the first thought I had that popped up in my mind: why is it a man, the naked negotiator? Why is it not a woman? As why did you decide for an experienced, bald-headed, glassed man with glasses, a man, and not a woman? That was my first thought. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I suppose one possible reason is maybe there's a slight autobiographical element in it. So but also, I did make the lead character a woman, and I confess I was a little bit nervous about that, because I've got to put the words, as the author, I've got to put the words into her mouth, and I'm obviously a man, and I'm going to look at things from a male perspective. But I am blessed with a wife and 3 grown-up daughters, so I did, I did go through a lot of the dialogue of Ellen, the lead character, as a woman, and look for their feedback to make sure that the character was, credible as a female. And I wanted to make her female because, without stereotyping, in general, women tend to be a little bit more reticent about this thing, this sort of thing. I mean, I need to say it's in general, because I've come across many fantastic female negotiators, and I've come across some very poor male negotiators. But But studies do show that in general, women are more reticent about asking for an increase. And so that's why I wanted to make the lead character a woman. I guess the negotiator, the naked negotiator, a man, maybe slightly, I'm writing about myself a little bit there.
that was my hypothesis. So thank you so much for verifying it. Yes, great. So we know that Naked Negotiator is a negotiation expert who is having her sessions with Ellen. Ellen is looking at a career step where she is up for promotion, but she doesn't know how to ask. So if we look at salary negotiation specifically, what are the challenges, the main challenges that we face when we are confronted with the intention of or the need of getting more money, higher salary, or more recognition in terms of promotion, in terms of let's say increasing our position within a certain company? What are the main challenges do you think that we face?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to think about if we're looking purely at getting a higher salary is to understand that you're in a market. The salary is set by the market that you're in. So, if you think about, top footballers are paid millions of pounds a year. Now, they don't get paid millions of pounds a year just because the clubs like them. It's because really top class players are hard to come by. And when you get a good one, it can bring a lot of revenue to your club. And so it's a marketplace. And that's why footballers are paid millions of pounds, other professions are taxi drivers are not, for example, not picking on taxi drivers, but so because there's lots of taxi driving is not particularly expert job, that lots of people can do it, and so that sets the market. So you need to understand that you can't just say I want an increase because I want an increase. That's not a reason for an increase. So really understand you're in a market. You're, whatever job you're in, there's a market for that job and there's a market price. So now the key thing, what is the market price? And, 90, if you're going to go into a salary negotiation, 90% of your work is going to be done before you even sit down and talk to your boss. So you need to go away. You need to try and be as specific as you can. Get as close as you can to the sort of industry you're in, the role you're in, and research and find out what the salary levels are in your area. And, that's going to be by going on job sites and getting on Google. And there are, I think, payscale.com. So there are a lot of sites that can give you this information. So you've got to do your homework, understand you're in a market, find out whether you're currently under or overpaid. Now, if you're overpaid, you've got a bit more of a challenge. But if you're average or below, then you've now got something you can start a discussion with your boss.
All right. I was expecting, Mike, to be honest, I was expecting that you would address the phase even that takes place before we start developing our strategy for salary negotiations, and that is the discomfort that many people feel, and also your protagonist Ellen feels about the upcoming negotiations with her boss. So the main reason why she, as far as I remember, in the book, the main reason why she decided to approach the Naked Negotiator is her uncertainty, her discomfort. She needs someone to reassure her that it's the right step, and someone to guide her on how to approach that step in her career. Yeah, do you feel that so many people?
That's go a ahead, fair please. Point. One of the key ways you're going to build your confidence is by having done your homework, by having the data in front of you, and being confident about what you're going to present. So absolutely, you're dead right. I mean, the other thing, and you may recall in the book that the naked negotiator makes Ellen do this, and she's very uncomfortable with it, is actually to rehearse the meeting. Now, I've done this in recruitment scenarios when I've been recruiting people, and I've done a sort of, you know, a role play, a negotiation role play. And most people engage with it. Some people just hate it. I remember one guy just getting up and saying, I've had enough of this, and walking out of the office. but role play, it can be really helpful. So you get a friendly, you know, a friend or a family member, get them to play the role of your boss and actually go through the argument that you're going to put forward.
So we know we can prepare, and preparation is exactly the method for us to address our anxiety, maybe our discomfort with the situation. Mm-hmm. And also that's a way of calibrating our expectations, isn't it? Right, the market value that you referred to, it's probably the main objective is to calibrate what is, I don't want to say fair, because some of my colleagues really hate the and call it the F word. Yeah,
I agree with them. It's a difficult word in negotiation, because it's not about fair, is it? But there is a word I use, reasonable. What is reasonable? Yeah, rather than fair.
Much
yeah,
better.
Fair is a bit woolly. Yeah.
So what is reasonable, right? I mean, it's a way of calibrating what is reasonable in a negotiation context. So let's imagine that we've done that. Yes. Let's imagine that we have gone to Glassdoor, and in Germany there's a portal called Kununu, which publishes also salary ranges for different positions, and there are multiple other services with similar purposes. So we've gone there and we have a feeling, we might be underpaid. So what's next?
So now you've got to make sure that you've got the data prepared. I would suggest try and make use of charts, of graphs, because they're very, you know, they tend to be more powerful than just saying, you know, a number. So make sure you've got your data. It is important actually to, if you've got any KPIs in your job, make sure you've got those. Now, you know, obviously that your position is going to be stronger if those KPIs are all moving in the right direction. Now, if they're all going in the wrong direction, then, you know, maybe you need to think about how you can improve those KPIs. Because obviously we're assuming, when you do your research, that if you're underpaid and you are doing a good job, because let's be honest, you've got to deliver for your employer. You know, that's only reasonable, coming to use that word again. So data to show that you're performing in your job, data to show that you do deserve a higher salary in the market is important. And the other thing I think possibly is going to be thinking about the type of person your boss is. And trying to reflect back to them the way they are. So, for example, if your boss is a, you know, very business oriented, you know, not very expressive, emotional, then you need to reflect that back to him or her, talk in that manner. Talk the language that they talk. Whereas if they're a more, you know, what we say in English, touchy-feely, if they're more touchy-feely, more emotional, you know, use that sort of language, even if it's not your instinctive way of doing it. So it's always best to speak the type of language that your boss speaks, present the data in a way that she or he will understand and recognize. And it is important to come back to, you know, you've got to remember for yourself, and also project to the boss, that you're not, what all you're asking for is something that's reasonable. I'm not being demanding, but it's reasonable. It's not reasonable for me to be paid lower than the market rate.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. Mike, although it you don't touch upon that particular aspect in the book, but let's add a little bit of a twist to the story. Let's imagine that Alan's boss went to the same dentist as Ellen's husband did, and saw the sign across the street, naked negotiator. Yeah? And her boss is also uncomfortable and also would like to get some reassurance with those salary negotiations in her team. What do you think the naked negotiator would tell Alan's boss, let's say from the other side, from the employer's side?
Well, it's a good question. And I think, you know, if you think about if you're in the employer situation, you know, what you're really concerned about is getting value out of your employees. Now, once your employee comes to you and puts a powerful argument to you that they're underpaid, well, you know, whatever your budgets are, you've got to take that seriously, because, you know, it's demotivating to feel you're going to work every day and you're not getting paid a fair amount. One of my clients bought the book and read it, and he, you know, he's very kind, and he messaged me and said how much he loved it. But he's a managing director, you see. Well, that was one of the challenges I had. I thought, well, it would be great to get lots of recommendations, but all the people I work with are the senior managers, so, you know, they're not the people who need this book. But anyway, he did. He read the book and he loved it. And then a few days later, someone came into his office and said, "I want a pay rise." And he said, "Whoa!" And he said, "Go and buy this book, read it, and if you can read this book and apply these lessons, then you can get your pay rise." And that's exactly what the chap did. He went away, he read it, and then he came back to Jonathan, the chap I know, and Jonathan was blown away. He said, "I was really impressed. He'd done his homework. He presented it brilliantly. He got a substantial pay rise. I can't remember, but something like 20%. It was a big pay rise." Wow. But interestingly, my MD friend, you know, was not giving that, you know, reluctantly. He could see that the case had been made. He was impressed by his employee doing his homework and coming and presenting it. So, you know, I think obviously now, if you're in an organization that is actually strapped for cash, that's a slightly different matter. But having said that, you know, that we're coming back to, as an employee, you're not a shareholder, you know, you're an employee. And that sort of thing is, that's their problem. You know, I deserve to be paid the right amount, a reasonable amount of
reasonable,
money.
Reasonable, reasonable.
Yeah, reasonable amount of money. But I think, yeah, so answer your question, I think naked negotiator would say, well, if the other party puts forward a good case, then it's actually in your long-term interests. We're coming back to negotiation theory here. We're thinking about longer-term interests. It's in your long-term interest to be reasonable in what you reward. To be stingy, you're going to demotivate, and that may help you in the short term, but it won't be a good long-term strategy.
I think, Mike, this is a very important point, and one of the misconceptions that that employees have of their bosses. Yes. Very often we think that the main interest on the side of the employer or boss is to minimize the salary. And this is not true, at least if the boss is wise enough or smart enough to have read your book and analyze the situation a little bit more thoroughly, right? Because yes, keeping or sticking to the budget is maybe one of the things, and it's probably one of the more important things, but it's not the only thing, right? I mean, at the end of the day, as you correctly say, hey, it's so demotivating, right, to be underpaid. And in my teams, when someone had a feeling of being underpaid, I've always asked them, hey, present me your case and I will fight for you. Mm-hmm. I will make sure that your case gets attention, and together we will fight for more salary. And I hope if anyone from my team is listening, they will recognize that this was very consistent response across the board. Yeah? So ultimately, I think the recommendation from your book and also from practical interactions of the similar sort are, hey, think about it as a market, number one. Build your case on numbers, number two. Number three, present your case as a as a dilemma, not as a threat. I think it's a very important distinction, right? No one likes being blackmailed, right? No one likes being threatened. So it's either this or I go or I walk, right? Have you had such cases before, Mike, in your business practice that your employees came up to you and said, well, it's either a pay rise or I walk?
Well, I mean, I've been doing the job I'm doing now for 30 years. And so for the most of the time, I'm working with just a small number of people. But then I work for larger organizations. So I haven't had that situation for a long time. But I do constantly, you know, I negotiate on behalf of my clients. And, you know, it is very important, as you say, that we, you know, there has to be a threat, but the threat must be, you know, subtle, if I could put it like that. Because if the other party, if your boss knows that you will never leave, then, you know, you haven't really got a negotiation. So, but what you don't want to do, as you say, is be confrontational. You don't, because, you know, we're human. So if we feel attacked, we tend to get defensive. And so you're exactly right. The way that, well, actually, this applies for any negotiation. A negotiation should be presented as a dilemma, as a puzzle to be solved. Look, we have this problem. How can we solve it? Rather than, this is what I want and you must give it to me. That's always a very bad way to approach any negotation, whether it's salary or whether it's...
Including salary negotiations probably as well, right? Yeah, yes, exactly. Absolutely. So we've talked about misconceptions, and there are many. Yes, and there are many in salary negotiations. One of them we've just tackled, what do the bosses want, right? And are there any other misconceptions when it comes to, or myths, or, you know, aspects that we all get wrong about salary negotiations that come to your mind, Mike?
So one that is very interesting and it gets explained in the book is an aspect that is a bit controversial in the negotiation world. It's like, who should offer first? Okay. So in most salary negotiations, you know, both parties know what the salary is. And so there's a kind of anchoring at the current salary. Now I'm of the negotiating school that says you should always offer first. You should always offer first to anchor the other party where you want them to be. Now, this is very counterintuitive when you're talking about a salary negotiation. So let's say you're paid, you know, 40,000 euros a year, and you go away and you do your homework and you realize that actually, you know, your market value is more like 60,000 euros a year. Now, you might think, well, that's a big ask. Can I really say 60,000 euros a year? But that's the most important thing, is that if you've done your homework and you're comfortable with it, get that number out, say that number as early as possible to your boss. I've done the research and I think a fair salary is 60,000. Don't start talking about the current 40,000, because that's the number that will lodge in both your brain and your boss's brain. So get that. If you've got a number that you know is right, get it out there, and that will, whoever the boss is, however learned, if he or she is human, that number will lodge in their brain, whether they like it or not.
That's very true. In fact, together with two good friends of mine, Wolfram Lipp and Peter Kesting, we did a survey of papers written on first offers and anchoring in negotiation. Yes, and there is vast scientific evidence, almost beyond any doubt, that making the first offers is connected with superior substantive outcomes. Yes, which means whoever makes the first offer does have an advantage in the negotiation. And I keep repeating, this is we didn't come up with this. Our literature review only confirmed what many scientists for the last decades found out in the complex experiments. And it also works in salary negotiations, right? So it's very important. It's very important to somehow keep in the back of our mind what you just said, Mike, that being first is one aspect of it and being ambitious is the other. Yes. Yes. Because the fact that the correlation coefficient between these two variables is positive, it also implies that those who are more ambitious get rewarded statistically more, right?
Which means absolutely.
Coming back to the point that you've made at the beginning of our conversation, assuming that we have certain basis to explain why we are asking for a raise of a particular magnitude, right, Mike? I mean, these three things combined, constitute a very nice, very convincing salary negotiation opening tactic. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that does lead us to another technique that you could potentially use if you wanted to be quite bold. If we go back to our example where you've got a current salary of 40,000 and you think you're worth 60,000, you could bracket your first offer and ask for 80,000, in that gives you room to come compromise and get to 60,000 where you wanted to be in the first place. Now, that's fine, but the only thing is you've got to make sure 80,000 is credible, you know, because if it looks silly, you're going to look silly and you're going to lose credibility. But if you genuinely feel that 80,000 is credible, but you feel that you would be happy with 60, you could be bold and say ask for 80, and you'd give yourself room to negotiate down or split the difference. I don't like splitting the difference, but you know what I mean. You get to the middle point and you still get what you wanted.
Exactly. So, Shihab, greetings to Egypt or Greece. I think Shihab was supposed to be in Greece this week or sometime in March. So he's asking the following question. What happens when the employer agrees, knows everything, and that I deserve the increase and that the market value is right, but the issue for him or her is that there is no budget that allows such increase? Mike, what shall we do if there is no budget?
Well, so that's a very pertinent question. I mean, one of the things that you might do as part of your research is look into the financial position of your organization. If it's a listed company, you should be able to get those in the public registers and see what the P&L situation is. I guess if it's a public organization, there may be a budget. Now, the one thing I would say within that is say, well, okay, you need to put me up a grade. If that's where you bring into a promotion, say I need to go up a grade at the end of the day. But this does come back to our threat. So you've done your homework to a certain degree, Remy. Whether the organization can afford it or not is not really your problem. But in the real world, but let's say you've done your homework. If it's a commercial organization that is losing money, then you have got a judgment to make for yourself there, because maybe you want to stay and support this organization and be underpaid. That's up to you. But you need to understand then, if you like, you're putting your money, your worth into this organization, and you need to feel like, okay, that's worthwhile doing. If it's a public organization with limited budgets or whatever, then I think then your next step there is to say, I should be a next grade up. That, my abilities, my market value means, so then, maybe there are budgets, but there are grades. So you move on to a promotion then.
Right. What do you think about in this context? What do you think about strengthening the dilemma behind it and exploring outside options? By exploring outside options, Mike, such as, for example, sending out applications for other positions, or maybe advancing in the recruitment process with other potential employers. Would you recommend that as a sort of a way of calibrating expectations and market value, or would you say first explore internal possibilities, and if they don't work, then look for other outside options?
I think that depends on how you feel about your current employer. In the book, Ellen loves her current employer, doesn't want to move. And so she does her homework and tries it with it, tries to negotiate without having to go on, you know, elsewhere. But the naked negotiator does say to her, you have to have some degree of threat. We don't want to create competition, but we need, we, so we, the way that he encourages her to present it is to say, look, if I can't get this reasonable salary, then I've got no choice. It's a dilemma again. I won't have any choice for the sake of my family. I will have to get another job. I don't want to. I love working here. So, but now if you're an employer that you don't, you know, you're with a company that you, you know, you're not so happy with, then, you know, it would be sensible, wouldn't it, to go out and do it, you know, apply for a few jobs. If you're in a situation where you love your employer, you still might want to do that if they've said no initially. They said no, go away. Actually, if you could get a job offer, that's fantastic. Then you go back to your employer. But again, you've got to be careful not to present it too confrontationally. But you've got to say, look, I've been offered this job. This pays the salary I need. Help me. I don't want to leave. I love it here. You know, so, but, you know, again, you need to think about your language, but you're effectively saying, you're forcing me out. You know, can we, you know, I don't want to do it. I love it here. So, but you ultimately, if push comes to shove in any negotiation, you must have a threat. You must have a threat, otherwise it's not a negotiation. But don't just wave your threat around, you know, like a big sword in front of people, because people don't react well to that. You have to be subtle about it.
Precisely, precisely. How important, in your opinion, is signaling our flexibility? So we've done our homework. We were very ambitious about it. We've anchored high, yes. I think one of the common mistakes that especially younger negotiators make is misinterpreting the meaning and the function of an anchor, using anchor as the ultimate value that we want to get, and rather than something that we accept adjustments to. So what is your take, especially in the context of salary negotiations, on flexibility? Signaling flexibility.
Yeah, I think it's important that you need to think carefully beforehand about what you are willing to accept. So you before you go into the meeting, you have to have that clear in your mind. And if you don't get your minimum level, you also need to think about how you will play it from that point on. So in terms of signaling flexibility, I think it is a good idea, but I wouldn't overdo it, I think. I think I would encourage anyone to be assertive, not aggressive, but assertive, and say, you know, this is really important to me. If you've got a level that is your walk away level, then if you're at that level, then I don't think I would say, well, that's it, I'm going to get another job. That's when I would call a break and say, you know, thanks for speaking with me. Can I go away and think about this? You know, not make any commitment at that point. And then you can rethink. Taking a break is actually a very good negotiating technique. I think you do need to be willing to concede. So you have to have a little bit there. Otherwise, you just look stubborn, don't you? Think about that beforehand. Make sure you've thought about that beforehand. Don't do that on the hoof in the meeting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the aspects that we need to keep in mind while analyzing this situation is, let's say, the balance of power. Yeah? So which means what are my alternatives, but also what are theirs. Yes? And I think many negotiators overlook this step in terms of in their preparation, and there are a lot of negative consequences that employers face if one of the employees decides to leave. And so And I remember, I'm not sure how it looks like right now, but there are significant recruiting costs connected with refilling certain positions, vacant positions. Yes, and this is something that both the hiring manager, the HR people, but also the employee who is fighting or requesting a pay raise need to consider there is a price tag on a no, and there is a price tag on a no, which sometimes is underestimated, at least in my opinion, in my past negotiations. It's very easy to say no to a pay rise, even if it means losing a lot more money while looking for potential alternatives. How is it like in the UK, Mike?
Yeah, much the same, Remy, and you bring up an excellent point, and this really is the value of really putting your the thought process in before the meeting. So you're exactly right. So these are the things that you think about. So, you know, you're talking to your boss. If your boss is, if he or she is in a senior position, they're going to be business minded. Okay. So they're going to be thinking like this. So there is a cost to recruiting someone new. If you use an agency, it's often 6 months salary. You know, it's quite a substantial sum of money. If you've got a degree of expertise, there's going to be the time required to get the new person up to speed as well. So these are the things that think about, write down, and those are the things that you can introduce in the discussion to try and emphasize the fact that if you force me to leave, and I don't want to leave, I love it here, if, you know, that's the strategy you're using, then there are additional costs, and these all add up, quite apart from coming back to the really important one that we touched on earlier, is that anybody who knows they're underpaid is going to be demotivated. Once you bring that to the attention of your boss, then they should take notice of that. If they don't, if they just brush that off, then really you've got to ask yourself, well, how valued am I? You know, and maybe at some point you may get to that point, am I in the right organization? You know, if you've got robust evidence to show that you deserve to be paid more and it gets brushed off, then that's a question there, isn't there, really?
Yeah, that makes sense, Mike. We have another great one from Prakar. Great mm-hmm. question. If I'm someone who is just starting out in the market, don't have many KPIs to back my previous work, and during a job interview, I can see that the other party is trying to offer a lesser pay than the market value, how should one navigate that question?
I guess it's a bit more tricky if you're in a job interview. There obviously is still a negotiation option there. But as you say, if you've got no previous KPIs, then you know, you've got to be sure you understand what your own value is. You might feel that you've got a value. But again, you know, maybe before you've gone into the job interview, you've really done your homework about what is a reasonable salary for that role and that level of experience. The only thing I would say in terms of job interview is that if you don't get involved in a negotiation on salary until the job's offered. So if they say, you know, what salary do you want? You say, well, are you offering me the job? Is the job on offer? Because if the job isn't on offer, it's kind of rather academic, isn't it, what the salary is? Yeah, so I would always recommend that if the discussion goes on salary, then first of all clarify whether the job is on offer. If it is on offer, then you've got a discussion to be had there. But I'm afraid I come back to you have to have done your homework before you go into that interview.
That makes a lot of sense, Mike. Let me maybe make this situation a little bit more complex. Yes. So let's imagine. So typically we focus on salary negotiations, right? Actually there are many more aspects to compensation. It's not only salary, it's, you know, it's a bonus and other perks and, you know, time and home office or working remotely and whatever, right? Company cars, insurance, healthcare, or whatever else, right? Do you believe, Mike, it's possible to create value in salary negotiations?
Yeah, the only thing I would say, now, these sort of additional perks or things like that, that they are relevant, and they're also relevant for this sort of discussion. But again, think about them beforehand. And I would always say that actually the best type of compensation is pound notes or euros, is the money you're paid, because then you have a choice about what you do with it. That is always the best compensation. Now, having said that, again, think rationally about it. So, for example, if your employer gives you really top-notch health insurance, and you know actually that that would be very expensive if you had to buy that yourself, then maybe that makes sense to trade that, to get that. But if that's what you want that very good health. If you want good health insurance, you know, it would cost you 5,000 euros if you get it yourself. But then that's the key thing though, isn't it, Remy? You've got to think about what's the value. You have to put it back to what is the monetary value of these perks. And that's something you think about for yourself, you work it out for yourself. But then that's brilliant if you've got that. Because if you say, well, I want this increase, and the answer says, well, you know, I can't come back, I can't do that for you, then now you can start saying, well, you know, what about I go up to the next level of healthcare? What about I get a company finance car? But understand beforehand, understand what what the value is to you. But then that really does expand the pie, as we negotiators say, to give you more options to discuss. And so you're not, if we find that the actual headline salary level is a barrier, then maybe we can use some of those other things.
Yes, absolutely. I remember advising a couple of executives in the past on their salary negotiations of my MBAs and executive MBA students. That's exactly the thing that that we try to identify in those engagements, and that is, you know, what is important to you. Is it the money? Yes. If yes, then we need to calibrate the expectations. But is there anything else that is important to you? Yes.
And Remy, just interject slightly there. So you mentioned, say, for example, working at home, and you're going to say, well, if I can have that flexibility and work at home, you've got to do a thought experiment. If someone offered me 10,000 euros more, but I have to go into the office, would I do it? What about if they offered me 15,000 more? So in your own mind, value what that is that gives you. And then once you've got that value in your mind, then you know how you can trade that against the salary increase.
Yes, I remember very well right now, as we discussed, I recall an example of an alumnus of our business school, who spent his almost entire career working for one employee of his choice. And it was his dream job. But at some point, he did have a feeling that because of his passion for that job, his bosses forgot to give him a raise. Yes. So, passion doesn't feed us, right? Doesn't buy bread, whatever, and doesn't help us when it comes to paying our bills. So at some point he reached out to me and asked me, hey, what shall I do? Yes, what shall I do? And we've gone through almost an exactly the list that we have just discussed, Mike. So I feel reassured. But one of the things, and by the way, he not only did he get a raise, he got a promotion and is now managing exactly that company. Yes, he's become, I think last year or year and a half ago, he became the managing director of exactly the company of his choice. Yes, so ultimately, I'm super happy that it worked out for him. But we're slowly coming to an end. And I have two more questions, Mike. One is, will there be a sequel to The Naked Negotiator, right? So this man, negotiation advisor, is that the new Sherlock Holmes of negotiation? Is that the new Hercules Poirot of negotiation? Will there be other types of or other engagements that he will be negotiating on? Are you planning a sequel?
You're not the first person to ask me that question, and it is something that's you know, rumbling around in the back of my mind there. And I kind of have in mind that, you know, in a way, we've used in this first book, we've used salary negotiation as like a case study. But, you know, it does apply, you know, the theory applies to almost any negotiation. But I have kind of got in mind that it might be interesting to do something, you know, like the naked negotiator goes to work. So now he actually goes into the organization and we open up into all sorts of other negotiations. So that's the thing I've got rumbling around in the back of my mind. So, you know, keep an eye out for it. You never know.
All right. Yes, that's super exciting. So the naked negotiator, guys, it's just seems to be just the beginning. If this is a, if there are autobiographical elements in it, hey, there is a lot of inspiration from the last three decades of Mike's consulting engagements in the negotiation scene. And we are likely to see, we're likely to see sequels and further episodes of the book. Mike, my last question is always the same. Greatness. Yeah. When I went through your book, I even wrote them down somewhere. I just need to open the right file. you're making a couple of claims in terms of you know, what distinguishes great negotiators, as you call them, top class negotiators from others. Yeah? So, for example, one of them is great negotiators are great problem solvers, not warriors. That's one of them. The other one, which I really liked, was calmness, confidence, and courtesy are the hallmarks of the top class negotiators. So now it's time for you, Mike, to name whoever comes to your mind when you think about greatness in negotiation. And it cannot be the naked negotiator. Yes, let's face it. It cannot be the naked negotiator.
Okay. Now, one of the things that when you're a consultant like myself, so you go into organizations because they need help. And so, you know, I come across many excellent people at my clients, but specifically negotiating, they're generally asking me in because of my expertise. And so, you know, I'm not normally working with top class negotiators, but one person I would highlight is a professor at the Wharton School in Philadelphia, Stuart Diamond, who has written a fantastic book called Getting More. And that is a more academic tackling of and comprehensive tackling of negotiating. But Stuart Diamond is outstanding. So if you push me to say, other than the naked negotiator, who is a top negotiator, present company accepted, definitely Stuart Diamond.
Yes, that's another book to put on our reading agenda. Guys, thank you so much for listening to our advice on salary negotiation. Thank you, Mike, for sharing your wisdom. If you listen or if you're watching or listening to our podcast right now, please remember, if you're facing salary negotiations, get ready and read The Naked Negotiator and his advice on how to get what we want in the context of promotion and salary negotiations. Mike, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Remy. Great talking to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.